One of the reasons we have those reflections, we have the chants before the meditation, is because it reminds us of the larger picture. Helps get us out of the narratives of our past couple hours. And in a way, we're following the example of the Buddha's Night of Awakening. His first knowledge was remembering his own past lives, lots of them. If you think you have narratives, the Buddha had lots and lots of narratives. When he was a human being, all the times he'd been a human being, different kinds of animals, devas. And just seeing the thread of his narratives didn't necessarily give him any insight into any pattern. Because as he said someplace else, people can have memories of past lives, and things don't make sense. Sometimes you're good in one particular lifetime, and you go to a good destination afterwards. Sometimes you're good in one lifetime, and you go to a bad destination right afterwards. There are times when you're doing all kinds of bad things. You can still go to a good destination in the next lifetime, or you go to a bad destination. So just looking at the one thread, it's hard to see the larger pattern. It was only in the second knowledge that he really began to understand the pattern of action, how actions lead to results. Skillful actions based on right view, based on having respect for the noble ones and their teachings, lead to good results, sometimes immediately, sometimes much later. And the same with bad actions, unskillful actions. They can lead to bad results. They're undertaken under wrong views, with disrespect for the noble ones. And the results may take time, or they may be immediate. But the connection is there. And he was able to see this only when he looked at the larger picture. So then he understood the importance of views and actions, and then applied that knowledge to the present moment, what kind of views and actions he was engaging in at that point. And it's important that you see your views as a kind of action. There's a tendency that we have to think of thinking as one thing and action as something else, like the contemplative life versus the active life. But thinking is a kind of action. Holding on to a particular view is a kind of action, which will then have a huge impact on other actions you do. So even your views fall into the teaching of karma. And in particular, you can see how your actions right now are causing suffering right now. That's the important thing you see in the present moment. If you haven't gone through the larger picture, just seeing that can be very depressing. If you're coming from a narrative of today, the events of today, that's not especially good narrative. You sit down, you see yourself causing more suffering just by sitting here, while you're sitting here. It seems to pile up on you. But when you stop to think and look at the larger picture, it's not just you. Everybody does this. Everybody has all kinds of unskillful thoughts, except for the arahants. And so that way we're all in this together. This is also why we have the chant, spreading goodwill, compassion, empathetic joy, equanimity, extending these thoughts, extending these attitudes to all beings. Because again, it helps us to see the larger picture. We're all suffering. We all want happiness, and yet we're all doing stupid things, some more stupid than others. But it's based on our desire to find happiness of some kind. And some people are extremely deluded and have lots of disrespect for the noble ones, really have very bad wrong views, create a lot of suffering for themselves and others. But you have to have goodwill for those people. May they find true happiness. May they understand what's required for true happiness and start acting on that knowledge. And then based on goodwill, we're aware of people who are suffering, we extend our compassion. And again, it's not only people who are experiencing the results of past unskillful actions, but also people who are engaged in unskillful actions right now. You've got to have compassion for them. Empathetic joy, both for people who are currently happy and for people who are doing wise and skillful things. When you think about it, it's all over the world, men, women, children, people in every continent, every country. The human race has all kinds. And people's skillfulness has nothing to do with their national background or their race or their gender or anything at all. It's a matter simply of skillful intentions, which is a factor independent of all those things. And then you look at the human situation and you find there are a lot of things that are pretty sad. And you can't do anything about them. That's where you have to extend thoughts of equanimity. Realizing that we all have our own karma. We all have done skillful things, we've all done unskillful things. And regardless of how we want those actions to come out, they're going to come out in line with the quality of the intention. Now, some people say the teaching on karma is hard-hearted. You see someone suffering and you say, well, there's some karma back there that's causing this suffering. But it's hard-hearted only if you reserve your compassion for people who are totally pure. After all, you have your own past bad karma. Why should your compassion be limited only to totally innocent people? You have to have compassion for everybody, regardless of how skillful or unskillful they've been in the past. The teaching on karma gives you a more level-headed attitude towards people's suffering, your own suffering, the suffering of other people. And it puts it in a much larger perspective. It's simply a question of action. You've really got to be careful about your actions. That's the take-home from all this. Whenever the Buddha would teach about the universe as a whole, the way karma plays itself out over many, many lifetimes, over huge cycles of time, the conclusion always was, well, karma is what causes these things to happen, and so you've got to focus on what you're doing right now, because this is where you're making your choices. The script is being written right here. And the way the storyline is going to go is dependent on your choices you're making right here. And you always do have the freedom, regardless of what your situation is. You can always choose to do the skillful thing. And you want to make the most of that freedom, most of that opportunity. And the more you make the most of it, the wider that door of opportunity grows. So as you're sitting here meditating and finding that thoughts of greed, aversion, delusion come up, fear, jealousy, whatever, you always want to take the larger picture. That regardless of what's coming up and what your mind is telling you about how you have to obey these things or fall in line with them, regardless of what it's telling you about what these thoughts tell you about yourself, always remind yourself, you do have the choice to do something skillful here. And the mind may be telling you, you're a pretty miserable meditator, you don't have much of a chance. Say, well, maybe I won't have a chance some other time, but right now I have the chance. Let's make the most of it now, because I can't make the chance happen back in the past. And I can't determine right now what choices I'll be making in the future. But I do know what I'm choosing to do right now. So do this thing skillfully. And when you've taken the larger view, it's easier to break things down into individual actions like this. The mind's habitual way of, say, falling in line with anger. Maybe an old habit, and it's going to take a while to uproot it. But just for right now, think of it simply as an action, as a choice. That's totally unrelated to what kind of person you think you are, or what the narrative of your life has been so far. This is one of the things that meditation shows you, is that the narrative is not set in stone. We're used to reading novels and stories where there's a narrative arc that seems inevitable. In fact, that's what the story is all about. It tries to make things seem pretty inevitable. And even the surprises, when they come, have to be prepared for. But as a meditator, you can surprise yourself at any time. The anger you've given into many, many times, you can surprise yourself and say, today I'm not going to give into it. The desire you've given into, you can say, I'm not going to give into it right now. And the mind will say, well, a few minutes down the line you're going to give into it, so why not get into it now? And so, well, that's a few minutes down the line. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it, but right now, I'm making the choice. As the Buddha said, even if you just tell yourself that you would like to do something skillful, that's a skillful thought right there, even before you've carried it out. You've set the mind in the right direction. And when you look at the larger picture, there are lots of stories of people who've turned themselves around, done unexpected things. Fact is often a lot stranger than fiction. Because the mind can change very quickly. As the Buddha said, the mind can change so quickly that there's no adequate simile for how quickly it can change. So we can take advantage of that fact and use it to our own, for our own benefit, for the benefit of others. The mind does not have to be set in its ways. So it helps to depersonalize things when you step back like this and take the larger view. It reminds you of possibilities that you have that you might not have thought of before. And if your personal narratives are getting stagnant, it helps open the windows and open the doors, flush out all that stagnant water, let in some fresh air.